what's your podcast about? And I don't even know how to answer that question. It's about conversations. It's about speaking with people and having dialogue about, you know, things that are going on around us, things that we see in society, and just having our opinion on those things and meeting different people in order and speaking with them, getting to know them, getting to see how different individuals think, how different individuals see life, you know. That's what the podcast is really about, and that's what you tuned in, hosted by the one and only Uncle Kevin.
Hello guys, how you doing? Welcome back to the podcast. Today we're in episode 25. Today we'll be talking about a book that I recently picked up by Patrick Bet David. It's called Doing the Impossible, The 25 Laws of Doing the Impossible. How many of us would try to do the impossible? Changing your life, losing weight, making money, making a change in the world. Like, that for me is one of those things that I've always viewed as impossible. So when I saw this book, I was like, you know what? I'm going to give it a shot. So I will not be going through all 25 laws in this episode, but we'll break down into 5 episodes. So today we'll be covering 5 laws. The laws that we'll be covering today are: invest in your identity. That's law number 1. Law number 2, let the right ones in. Law number 3, protect your credibility score. Law number 4 is strengthen your greatest weapon. And law number 5 is challenge your way of thinking. All right. So in this book, the author begins by asking us a question. Do you remember a time where you used to believe you could be anything? I remember when I was a child, when I was asked what would I want to be, I always wanted to be a soccer player. I always wanted to be in front of people, having people with jerseys with my name, playing for my national team. Back then, because I come from Zimbabwe originally, so they used to wear yellow jerseys, and I always imagined myself running down the wing in a yellow jersey, scoring a World Cup winner or something like that, and making my family proud, making my nation proud, making my country proud. As I got older, my dreams began to change. At some point, I wanted to be a pilot. Man, I really wanted to fly planes. I remember we took a trip to the airport and we had to fly. Not fly as such, but we had to sit in the cockpit and see how that stuff works. And I fell in love with it. I really wanted to be a pilot for a period of time. Then I wanted to be a policeman because I started watching movies, and you'd watch all those police chases and how cool detective movies were. I remember watching Martin Lawrence at one point, and I was like, yeah, when I grow up, this is something that would interest me. And I used to have this vivid imagination. I remember I'll be playing soccer in the streets, and I'll be calling myself David Beckham, bendy like Beckham. I was so obsessed with Beckham to the point that at some point I actually developed the technique of hitting free kicks. But unfortunately, as I got older, I never really stayed with soccer. I had to focus on my studies, and I had to focus on other things that I fell in love with as I got older. But for the author to ask us this question is, you remember having that imagination of a child where you believe you are literally anything and can be anything? You know, somehow we lose that as we get older. Part of the book which captures me is when he says, Hollywood makes money by creating movies to make you believe for a split second that you can be Rocky, Rudy, Peyton, or Alexander the Great. The downside is that a person spends $20 to watch the hero instead of being that hero himself. And the reason this statement picked out for me was it's very interesting how many times we have debates about our favorite superheroes in movies. For me, Iron Man is probably one of the greatest Marvel superheroes for me. And for some people, they have different people, and we watch them because we admire certain characteristics within them. For me, Iron Man is because he was smart. It's because he was compassionate. He was funny. He was rich. He was everything that I desire to be and everything that I wish to be, that I view myself. If I was a hero, I would be, you know, I don't see myself as Hulk. I don't see myself as a god, as Thor. You know, I don't see myself as Loki. I don't see myself as Cap. Like, but I could see myself as Iron Man. And so when you see this, it's fascinating that the author brings this up. Is a lot of times we have posters, we have these pictures of people on our screensavers as as our heroes. And most of us don't even look at in the mirror and see a hero, you know? And it's fascinating that when you have children, they look at you like they're a hero and you can't even believe it, you know? So the author continues to say, in order to do the impossible, you have to tap into what motivates you. It all starts with a dream. If you don't have a vision that drives you to do the impossible, the mechanics of how to get there are irrelevant. Yeah. So part of the book, it's titled, right? Doing the impossible things. How do we do the impossible? How do we become heroes in our own stories? How do we fulfill our dreams? The first thing is you have to understand what the impossible thing is. What is the dream? What is the goal? What are you trying to achieve? You know, you can't just say I'm setting out to achieve the impossible. You have to understand what the vision is, what the goal is. For me, with this, my goal is to become one of the top film directors, top media practitioners. Like, I want to be a very, very big and massive human being in this world, man. I want to have influence and help change the narrative of Africa, help change the narrative of Africans, man. We've been portrayed as being dumb in movies, and that's something that I've set out to change. You know, it's the real ones know that Africans are smart. The real ones know that Africans are not dumb. But in order to do that, we have to make the movies. We have to be involved and we have to make the content. That's what I've set out to achieve, right? And that becomes my goal. That becomes my impossible. And in knowing that and in fulfilling that, you have to understand that how to get to that goal, it becomes irrelevant, because a lot of times when you have a vision, whatever plans and schemes you can come up with in trying to achieve that vision, switch. Everything changes, you know. Everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. No matter what your dream looks like, you must first have the vision of where you want to go and what you want to achieve. All right. So this is in line with everything, because once you know where you want to go, I always use an example of a journey from your place to go buy bread at your local grocery store. You know, in order to go to the grocery store, you need to know where you're going. That helps you understand the resources that you need to go out there and to make a plan of what you need. You know, sometimes we're so unconscious that we don't even think about it. It's just a drive and go pick up. But the thing that makes you start your car is you already know the distance. You already know how much time you want to spend in doing that activity, which is the same with your vision and goals. With having a vision and a goal, it helps you to structure everything and put it in a way that assists you to go achieve that. And you understand your obstacles, you see everything, and you are well prepared to achieve those goals. All right. In the first chapter of the book, the author states that dare to do the impossible. These are all things that we need to think about to understand that nothing in this world is really impossible. The only limits are the ones that we place on ourselves. Whether it was the first automobile, the idea of electricity, or moon landing, the believer who first imagined the impossible made it possible for others to believe it and achieve it. You know, prior to this, he asks a question. Think about it. Before we had planes, there was a world. You know, today I met a lady who was 74 years old, and she asked me how old I am. I'm barely 28. And she's like, wow, you're so young. And she was just explaining to me how in the period that she's been on Earth, how she was born before the technology that we're experiencing right now and the technology that she's seen in her time. I was so fascinated. She was telling me that she used to live in Quebec, and how back then when she was a child, they didn't have a fridge. Like, a fridge didn't exist then. Back then, what they had to use was people would come with big blocks of ice, and that's how they kept food cold. And sometimes they had to go get snow to melt it in the house to have water to drink, and they didn't have tap water. And this is in a period of life from, this is just 74 years. I was like, wow. It's fascinating and amazing to me that the world has transformed so much in a short space of time. But when you think about the time that I've been on this earth, you know, 28 years, we didn't have cell phones when I was born. Phones, landlines were there. Technology was there. The internet only got birth like 2 years after I was born. So when you think about how far the world has progressed 25 years later, and how kids born within the last 10 years were literally born into this phase of technology, into this phase of fast-moving technology, it makes you look in awe and wonder what really is impossible and how do we make things very possible. And it only happens by the first person trying to achieve greatness, you know, that we see it. We're like, oh, you can do this. So can I. All right. One of the things that stops us from believing that, you know, we can achieve the impossible that the author brings up is the spirit of fear. Fear is the most destructive emotion for personal transformation. Fear thrives on the unknown. Our imaginations run wild with possible negative scenarios. By choosing to put yourself in situations where you have to face your fear, you learn that it is far easier to face reality than the endless loop of possible challenges your mind creates. The feeling of overcoming fear in turn gives you confidence to face the next challenge. Our lives improve only when we take chances, and the first and most difficult risk we can take is to be honest with ourselves. So he touches on a lot of points there. One thing is, when it comes to pursuing your dreams, when it comes to pursuing your goals and trying to achieve anything, the first thing that hits you is fear and the desire to make things perfect. You know, what fear does and creates in all of us is these scenarios in our mind where it makes no sense, man. It's like, I remember the acronym FEAR standing for false evidence appearing real. It's ridiculous how real a lot of things are when you're afraid. It, like a shadow of a tree can be a bear in your eyes if you're walking down the woods. You can think that there's somebody there when there's nobody. Think about every time you have to take out the trash at night and it feels like someone is chasing you when you're walking back into the house, man. And then we move from there where he speaks about our lives only improve when we take chances. And the thing is, by taking chances, we're just trying, you know. The essence of it is you don't know what you don't know. And a lot of times we're afraid of the unknown. But by just taking a chance, you never know. You never know what will work out. You never know what will not work out. And that's the big risk, you know. We have to be super honest with ourselves. Like, yo, I'm willing to make this, to take this chance and go for, after it. Making the decision to pursue the impossible is scary at first. You have to face your fears and throw away your excuses. Start out by believing two important things. You are capable of greatness. And that facing your fears to realize your dreams will be the best decision you've ever made. You know, the number one thing a lot of us grow up with is we grow up around people who did not succeed at the things that they wanted to achieve to the point that their lack of belief within us starts to affect us into believing that what we are trying to achieve is borderline impossible to achieve. And so you grow up in this fear, in this phase of things happening, of, you know, people destroying your psyche and making it difficult for you to realize that whatever you put your mind to, whatever you dedicate yourself to, you can achieve. You can be great. You know, a lot of times we look at great people and how their offsprings tend to be great as well. And how for people who are not great, their offsprings tend not to be great because environment helps shape individuals. So part of this is you have to understand, especially if you come from environments where there's very few people who have been successful, you put yourself in a position to understand that, no, I can be great. I can do something with my life. The buck stops with me. You know, this is the last time that we will be broke. This is the last time that we, you know, I don't know, we will be out of shape. You know, whatever greatness means to you, the buck starts with you. So now we'll go deep down into the laws. First law that we'll be looking at is invest in your identity. That's law number one. In this chapter, what the author touches on is you have to have an understanding of what your identity is. Who do you identify as, you know? I once heard somebody say that the trick with identity is once you define who you are, you also define who you are not. So your identity can be your reputation. Your identity can be how you carry yourself, how you dress, how you show up at places, how people think about you, you know. That's your identity. And you have to work hard to base this off. Okay, have you ever thought about your identity? Not just your name and vital statistic, but what and who you are. Where we are in life is based on our identity. Our beliefs are based on our identity. Our future worth and opportunities will also be based on our identity. Many people think that if they change their circumstances, e.g. get a new higher paying job, their identity will follow suit. This approach is actually backwards. In reality, we change our identity from the inside out and change in our and changing our circumstances will follow. You know, one of the quotes that I live by is, first we do the work, then the dreams will come. What tends to happen a lot of times with the issues of identity is, if your identity is based on the belief, say, and an example that's given in the book is, you make $30,000 a year. You know, you have the identity of a $30,000 a year person. That's the amount of money you make. That's the amount of, that's the type of house that you live. And then some catastrophe happens and you start making $200,000 a year. Because your identity is based on how you saw yourself at $30,000, you start to feel inferior at $200,000 associating with people who make $200,000 a year. So in order to compensate for this, you start to buy stuff, you know, you start to buy expensive cars, you move into an expensive neighborhood, you start to operate as if there's someone who has money. But this is all based off of your identity, because deep down, you know that you don't belong amongst the 200,000 club. And what tends to happen is you will lose that because your identity doesn't allow you to thrive in that environment. So you have to invest into your identity with an understanding that in order to do the impossible, the reason it's impossible is just because at this level that you are at, it feels and seems like it's undoable. That's because that's probably the reality. But the thing is, you can change. History, you know, you can look at people who've won lotteries, you know, history and state lotteries have shown us that those who come into very large sums of money without earning it or without having the identity to keep it often end up broke again and worse off than they were before they won the money. Money is something that has to be grown into with a developed sense of discernment, responsibility, and wisdom. And this goes down back to what I was explaining, that, you know, if you run into money that you didn't earn, that you didn't work for, that you didn't, you know, by work for, a lot of times, you know, we've been made to believe work simply means grafting, doing the hard labor. But work means working on yourself to become the person who's worthy the amount of money that you want to get, because now you have an understanding of how that money was made, the investments that you had to make, and the respect that you have for the money that you're making, you know. So always work on yourself. Never stop working on yourself. Sometimes it may take years for us to actually transform into the person we see ourselves as. But if we truly believe that that is the person we're meant to be, eventually we'll find a way to embody the identity. So if you want to make $200,000 a year, $1 million a year, $1 billion a year, you have to become that person. You don't just wake up with the millions. You don't just wake up and do the impossible. You have to become a 5-year overnight success, because those 5 years help transform you from the poor version of you to the richest version of you. Building identity is about earning that identity. It's about doing the hard work, seeking the information, transforming yourself from the inside out into the person you envision on becoming. The empires of the future are empires of the mind. If you want your future to look different, you have to start by changing your thinking and building your identity into the person who you desire to be. So think about this, man. Whoever you want to be is going to be determined by your mind, by the things, the investments that you make in your mind, the amount of work that you make in your mind. You know, if you want to transform your identity, you must make the process of a priority in your life. You know, the time that you spend on your identity makeover will positively transform the other areas of your life. In the book, the author asks the question, out of your 168 hours a week, how many hours do you spend reading, listening to personal development CDs, attending personal professional conferences, associating yourself with high identity individuals? His answer was an hour a week. Asked, how do you expect an hour a week to compete with the other 167 hours? So to bring context to the statement, what happens, a lot of times we want to succeed. A lot of times we want to be better individuals. But the question is, how much time are you putting into becoming a better individual? How much time are you putting into reading? How much time are you putting into meeting with other successful individuals? How much time are you putting into trying to understand this world that you'd like to live in? And what tends to happen a lot of times is we invest our time into things that we do not want to have. And by the end of the year, we look back and say, how come my life hasn't progressed as much as I wanted it to when I've been doing the work? Yeah, you've been working on the wrong thing. So we move on to the next law. The next law is, let the right ones in. The idea is to create an advisory board of friends who lift you up, challenge you, inspire you, and hold you accountable. Your friends are going to influence you either way. So why not pick the friends who will be positive influence? You know, birds of the feathers flock together. The essence of this law is you have to be very careful who you allow in your life, your friends. You have to vet them. You have to be very clear in terms of what you expect, what you tolerate, what you do not. If they bring you down, walk away. If they do any weird stuff, walk away. The goal is to understand that your success and your future is based on you. You know the statement, show me your five friends and I'll show you who you are. That statement, in as much as it's weird, it is true. Because a lot of times, if you have friends that are constantly complaining, trust me, if it looks like a duck, quacks like a duck, talks like a duck, it is a duck. You will soon start complaining. They will influence you to do some negative stuff. So you have to be very careful of the people that you allow within your life. And these are things that we've been told growing up. These are things that we've read in books, you know. We have a couple of examples of successful people and their friends. Walt Disney befriended Ray Kroc while the two were working together as ambulance drivers in 1917. Bill Gates and Warren Buffett have become friends and partners in philanthropy. Magic Johnson and Larry Bird were both competitors and friends. They spoke the same language of doing the impossible. Two of the most influential American authors of all time, Ralph Waldo Emerson and David Thoreau, lived in the same small town and were close friends. Their dialogue helped shape each other's philosophy. Another famous friendship existed between writers C.S. Lewis and J.R. Tolkien. The two became the best of friends, not just because of their shared belief in the power of myth and writing, but also because they shared religious beliefs. Making the active decision to change your associations can lead to some painful criticism. For example, if you realize that if you want to make it to the NBA, you need to stop playing ball with your friends at the YMCA and instead start running with players at a much higher level. What tends to happen with this one, and it affects all of us, you know, when you want to succeed, you have to ask yourself, what's the definition of success? You know, what's your definition of success? What are you trying to do? If you're trying to play in the NBA and you're playing with people like me who can barely put the ball into the basket and rarely run, rarely train, and you're trying to go to the NBA, you're wasting your time, fam. Okay. If you want to be in the NBA, you need to find other people who are like-minded, who want to go to the NBA, who are working hard so that iron sharpens iron and both of you benefit from the relationship. Whilst, you know, out of 1,000 people, only 20 people make it on the team. So you can't spend your time with people who have no opportunity at all of making it. I'm not saying that forget your friends, but what I'm saying is you just have to be very honest with yourself in terms of who are you spending most of your time with and can your time be used in a better way. Very rarely will you have friends who completely support you for what you're doing. My father once told me that finding a true best friend is just like finding a great spouse. One special person is worth more than hundreds of acquaintances. A true best friend will build you up and believe in you. Lesser friends and even family members may not. Sometimes they are worried that they're being left behind, or perhaps they simply lack your belief. Believe it or not, this is where most people hesitate when pursuing their dreams. They let the criticism and doubts of others get to them and they give up. You know, it's very sad that we come from societies that, you know, sometimes don't support us and don't believe in us, you know. And it's not that they don't believe in us, it's they don't believe in themselves. And by believing in you, they feel less of themselves, that they don't want to see you succeed. It's better if we all, you know, the crab in the bucket mentality. It's a sad, sad situation to have, but a lot of times we have to deal with it. People believe that, you know what, I'm going to have the PhD syndrome, the pull him down syndrome, or pull her down syndrome. That if I see you trying to succeed, no, I have to pull you down because I can't succeed. And a lot of times, you know, people will give you advice like, oh, why don't you stop doing that? Why don't you stop investing in yourself? Why don't you stop reading? Why are you reading? Why are you working so hard on this stuff that doesn't work? It didn't work for me. Why do you think it'll work for you? Music doesn't pay. Why do you keep doing music? Why do you do this? A lot of times it's just that people have tried pursuing their own dreams and they failed and feel like, you know, they love you and they don't want you to do that because you remind them of what it was like when they used to dream and then they had to stop pursuing their dreams for one reason or another. So you have to put yourself in a position where you understand that you're trying to achieve the impossible. It's not, if it was possible, everybody would do it, you know. Wounds from a friend are better than many kisses from an enemy. All truth passes through three stages. First, it's ridiculed. Secondly, it's violently opposed. Third, it's accepted as being evident. So remember this when you start out. People will, in the beginning, make fun of you. What are you trying to do? Man, you're stupid, you know. And then the second thing is they'll violently oppose you. The more you're working, the more they see the progress, the more they see, oh, wow, you're doing something for yourself. That's when it all comes. You know, everybody will be in your way because your success starts to put fear within other people's eyes because now you're at the brink of it. Now you're showing that it's possible. That's when you start getting opposition from your family, opposition from your friends, enemies. Everybody wants you to fail. And then, boom, once you succeed, the questions are, how did you do it? It's ridiculous how it works, but you just have to have, man, I don't know, the toughness to pursue your dreams and goals. The next law that the author talks about is protect your credibility score. This one, man, it affects a lot of us. How credible are you? Are you a person of your word? Are you a man of your word? Are you a lady of your word? If you tell me that you're going to do something, should I believe that? You know, because if you're very credible, people want to work with you. People want to associate with people who are credible, people that you know deliver, you know. Think about someone telling you, I'll email you on Friday, and then Friday pops up and the email comes up. You've forgotten about that. You're like, damn, that person is very credible. You look at this podcast game. People say, I launch a video every Monday, every Wednesday, and then come Wednesday, there's nothing. You're like, you promised us something, man. Be credible. So in this book, the author asks, here's some of the things he brings up. Nearly all men can stand adversity, but if you want to test a man's character, give him power. In this instance, I'm guessing that, a lot of times when we're going through tough times, a lot of us, we are people of faith. We are people of diligence. We are credible. But the moment you're handed power and you don't have to do what you did to survive, all credibility walks out the door. You're like, man, I ain't gotta do that. Why would I do that? You know, if there were a formula to run a credit check to determine what your FICO score is on keeping your word, how would you do? If you had to run my report in 1997, that, you know, his FICO score would be low and probably mine too, man. I'm, you know, prior to this year, I was really old talk, no action. You know, I was working a little bit, but I know my potential. I know what I can do. But I was really a lot of talk, man, and little action, a lot of excuses. This doesn't work because of that. That won't work because of this, but I'll do this and then I'll just be a dreamer. And with time, been 8 years, you're like, yo, I've done nothing with my life than just give excuses. I realized how powerful a person becomes when he strengthens his own word. It starts with small promises you keep and leads to big commitments where someone will put a lot of trust in you because you've earned it. Do not make any commitments that you are not 100% sure that you can keep. You know, one of the toughest things in life is when you trust somebody to do something and they fail to do it, like, oh, we'll meet at 10 a.m. and they show up at 11. And here you are, you had plans like, oh, when we meet at 10 a.m., by 10:30 we'll be done with our meeting, I'll move on. And then that person shows up at 11. Man, come on. There are 7 things that will destroy us. These ones are important. There are 7 things that will destroy us. Wealth without work. Pleasure without conscience, knowledge without character, religion without sacrifice, politics without principle, science without humanity, business without ethics. I'll repeat this. There are 7 things that would destroy us. Wealth without work, pleasure without conscience, knowledge without character, religion without sacrifice, politics without principle, science without humanity, business without ethics. You know, that's a whole list. I'll just touch on a few there. You know, wealth without work. The thing about wealth without work is it's very hard to appreciate wealth if you didn't put in effort to acquire it. Like, it takes sacrifice. It takes a lot of hard work. It takes a lot of, you know, bouncing your head for something and you just got it. It's easy to spend money you just got. Think about if you give someone $2,000, they just pick it up, go spend it. You know, look at how kids play with food. It's like, eh. But if you work for that food, if you do the work, you appreciate everything that you have, man. Knowledge without character. Knowledge without character simply means some people know stuff, but they don't have the character to implement that knowledge. You know, think about gossipers. Like, you have the knowledge that something happened, and all you think about is gossiping, talking about somebody instead of helping, instead of doing something about the situation. You don't have the character within you to do it, you know. You don't get to this point overnight. Becoming a person who keeps your word starts with doing the little things, like calling someone back when you say you will, or arriving at an appointment in time. When you're trying to become a person or build your credibility, you know, a lot of times it's just about being punctual at work. You know, just show up wherever you have to go on time. That's it. Make a promise to yourself. Achieve that. You know, tell people that you do something and do it. Character is much easier kept than recovered. This is true. You know, one of the most terrible things anybody could ever do you is a character assassination. Because once people start to doubt your character, it's a wrap, fam. Be more concerned with your character than your reputation, because your character is what you really are, while your reputation is merely what others think you are. So character is essentially how you show up in the world, how you carry yourself, how you think, how you approach people, how you do things. Out of character, you build a reputation. Oh, he does a good job. Oh, he's always on time. That's your reputation. He speaks his mind, speaks the truth. Character is how you treat people, how you show up in the world. Is, man, I don't really like that person's character. Once people start saying statements like that, you're in trouble. And then we move on to law number 4, strengthening your greatest weapon. In this section of the book, the author mainly talks about reading and making sure that your mind, because your mind is your greatest weapon. It can propel you. It can destroy you. It can do whatever. Anything you put your mind to, you will achieve it. Why should we stop learning when we finish school at the age 18 or 22 or age 50 or ever? It's funny that we accept that going to college will lead to making more money or getting a better career, yet we don't assume that self-education will do the same. One should never stop being trained. That is victory. You know, when it comes to education, a lot of us were told, get a degree, get a job, get a house, get a wife. Put a picket fence around it, get a yard, have a kid, life goes on. Because that was the promise of education. That's how education positioned itself in life, in our lives, right? From back whenever it started, that's just how they positioned it. The sadness, the sad part about it all is they set us up for failure. Because the moment you finish school, life happens, man. That's when life starts happening. School is, you live in such a bubble, far away from reality. You know, it's like taking a break from reality to get educated and then coming back into reality and realizing, whoa, the world moves a little bit different. You know, that theory is good to have, but then it's also terrible to have because the world moves a little bit different. It moves a little bit different. And you have to be very conscious of this. So part in this book, what it talks about is you should make sure you're constantly reading, should expose yourself to more information. In your car, instead of playing music, play some audiobooks. Instead of doing this, just keep on learning, keep on exposing yourself, and keep on taking on new information, watching podcasts like this one, watching podcasts where people have conversations of progressing, conversations that help you, you know, rather than just waffling through life and saying, oh, I have a master's degree, I have a PhD, I have a bachelor's degree, I'm educated. Yes, you are educated, but the world keeps moving. You know, technology keeps developing. There are always new ways of doing things, and you have to keep on learning. So always sharpen your greatest weapon, which is your mind. And by exposing yourself, you allow your mind to open up and see new things. And those fears we spoke about in the first chapter start to move away. The fifth and final law that we'll be speaking about today is challenge your way of thinking. Sometimes hitting the lowest point in our lives can be the turning point that causes us to challenge and change our current way of thinking. This tends to happen because we often find ourselves in situations that we end up in because of the way we think, because of the way, you know, our brains operate. You thought yourself into obesity. You thought yourself into poverty. You know, if you're born into poverty, chances are you die in poverty because of how you think, how you operate, how you carry yourself, you know. And you have at some point to start challenging, why do I think the way I think? What drives that? You know, you have to ask these questions. It was then my darkest hour that something occurred to me that changed my life. I realized that it was my way of thinking that had gotten me to where I was. I was not some set of outside forces that I couldn't control. It didn't take a long time for me to realize that I had to change my way of thinking, or else life was going to be the same, if not worse, for a very long time. You know how that statement, only a fool hits his head over doing, no, it's doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. What tends to happen, you know, when you come up, you know, I come from a religious family. When we're growing up, you know, everything was the devil, man. The devil would do this, the devil would do that. The devil would do this, the devil would do that. And whilst that's pretty cool for a time, at a certain period of time, you have to start facing reality because your life stops being shaped into the way you want it, and you keep giving the devil all the credit, you know, for a sucky life just because you didn't want to change the way you think. You have to challenge your thought process sometimes, man. You have to really, if people are succeeding, you have to ask yourself, how come they're succeeding and I'm not? How come they're eating and I'm not eating? How come their lives are moving and my life is not moving? What do I need to do to make the changes that are necessary to be able to move in the way that other people are moving, to move in the way that, you know, the rest of the world is moving, you know? Is it my thinking, you know? Remember, I remember hearing once that the difference between successful people and unsuccessful people are the questions that they ask themselves. Successful people ask, what if my dream can become a reality? What if I can achieve the impossible? What if I can design my own future? Unsuccessful people ask themselves, what if I fail? What if something bad happens? What if I'm not capable? And this is all driven by your thought process, because if you're constantly thinking that anything and everything is possible, your questions are totally different for someone who's always saying, what if I fail? Like, think about that girl that you like, that boy that you like, when you wanted to ask them out and you're like, what if they don't like me? But what if they do? You know, just try. You never know. Shoot your shot, they say. You know, you miss all the, what you never make the shots that you never took. Shoot your shot. Do your thing. Just try. The right questions will lead to a motivation to follow through on the answers. Your mind will find a way to make what you imagine a reality. Once you accept that you are not only responsible for, but are also capable of making that future a reality. With this statement, what it simply means is, by asking yourself the right questions, can I make $100 million from a podcast? Is that even possible? Yes, it's possible. What do I need to do? Your mind will run and find all the thoughts. It will see actions that other people have taken and see ways that we can implement it into our own lives and build platforms that allow us to reach those levels that we dream of. It might take 5 years, it might take 10 years, it might take 20 years. But your mind comes up with that. Or if you ask yourself the wrong question, how do I not make $100 million? Your mind will also give you those, the same picture. It will run around, find the information, be like, oh yeah, cool, you know, this is how you do not succeed, just do this and let's do that, you know, because that's the easiest part. So this book is the 25 laws of doing the impossible. What we are doing here is to try to do the impossible. It's and I don't even think the word impossible should exist, but it's just us trying to do that. How do we move from where we are today to where we want to get to tomorrow? You know, we have to believe A, that we are capable, B, that greatness is within us, and C, you know, I love this statement, repeat after me, I can, I will, I must. I can, I will, I must. I can be successful, I must be successful. No, I can, I will be successful. You know, believe in yourself. I took that from Eric Thomas, so I'll give him his credit. I can, I will, I must. I can, I will, I must. All right? We can change our narrative. We can change our future. We can change our present. It's up to you and me to make sure that we make our dreams become a reality. In this book, we'll get to learn more about the 25 laws of making the impossible possible. Fight longer than possible. How many guys, Batman Dark Knight Rises, fight longer than possible? You know, you gotta keep on pushing. Because that's just how the world works. It's possible. You are capable of greatness. Believe in yourself. With that said, I hope you guys enjoy this podcast. We've reached the end of the podcast. We'll be touching again on this book. We have 20 more laws to go through. Come through next week, Wednesday. That's when we do our book reviews and touch on other issues. And yeah, I'll see you next week. Peace.